Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC, this is Money Talking. I'm Charlie Herman. We hear a lot about the ideological and military muscle of the Islamic State, but ISIS's power also comes from the way that it dominates the economy of the territory that it occupies. With me today are two reporters who have investigated ISIS's finances. Stacey Vanek-Smith is with NPR's Planet Money, and she just finished a report that examines a budget statement that was smuggled out of ISIS-held territory. And Erica Solomon is the Middle East correspondent for the Financial Times, and she's been writing a series of investigative stories documenting how the Islamic State trades oil and weapons. And Erica, let me start with you. How does ISIS fund itself?
It's a question that changes over time. So generally, we found oil to be sort of the most constant revenue stream since they took over eastern Syria. But there's also huge bursts suddenly where they'll advance in an area and confiscate even hundreds of millions of dollars worth of housing or salaries from government officials, banks. And so it really changes. And that's one of the things that financial experts who are trying to combat ISIS financing are trying to get officials to focus on, is that you can't pick one thing and say this is what funds ISIS. It will always find another resource to tap.
Well, Stacey, let me ask you specifically, though, about that oil component, which is one place where they've gotten a lot of money. How exactly does that work? Because, you know, to pull oil out of the ground to refine it, like, that's not an easy thing to do.
Well, I think initially, so the budget that I took a look at was from Deir ez-Zor, which is the most productive oil region controlled by ISIS right now. And I think when they initially came in, everything was sort of all set up. The oil was being produced. There were tanker trucks full of oil. The whole sort of assembly line was in place. And ISIS was really able to take advantage of that. For a while, they were really just smuggling tens of thousands of barrels a day over their borders to sell on the black market. Now that's gotten a little more complicated. I think the fact that a lot of oil wells and refineries and now trucking routes have been bombed have really cut back on ISIS's ability to produce oil and its ability to refine it into gasoline.
So, Erica, if the oil production is falling, if you can really only confiscate someone's home once, if that sort of revenue is not coming to ISIS as much as before, what are new ways that they are finding to be able to have the finances necessary to keep their operations going and growing?
Well, first of all, I think that they do still have like a decent amount of revenue stream from oil because they can find ways to adapt by sort of switching how they extract oil. But also, you still have taxation. So what they've done is they've implemented a model of zakat, which is the Islamic form of tithes for alms for charity. And so they tax businesses, they tax truckers.
Stacey, when you looked at that budget document that you got your hands on, what was the thing that stood out to you the most about it that was really surprised you?
The thing that surprised me the most definitely was where most of their income was coming from in this province. I fully expected that it would be oil and gas, but by far and away, they were making most of their money from confiscations. 44% of the income that they made, and this was for 1 month in January, came from confiscations. And they even broke it down in this really fascinating way. You know, there were 1,300 head of sheep, 50 cows, 1,200 cases of cigarettes, 180 dunams of land, 36 trucks. I mean, that they would just make it a line item in the budget sort of surprised me.
It's amazing.
But it was right there, right next to taxes. And taxes and oil in this budget were about the same. They were both about a quarter of ISIS's income for this month came from a quarter from taxes and a quarter from oil and gas.
When you look at a document like that, do you think that it actually implies that the ISIS-held territory is a state that has a functioning economy?
Oh, that's interesting. I mean, yes. One of the most interesting examples of this that I came across was how they handle antiquities. So they have a minister of antiquities, ISIS does, and the minister's job is to oversee the looting of antiquities. So if you want to loot antiquities, you have to, you know, stand in line and pay a fee and get a permit to do that. And then when you find something, like a, you know, vase or old coins, you have to take it, declare taxes on it, and then you can sell it on the black market. So they're sort of trying to take crime and, you know, legitimize it and sort of turn themselves, I think, in that way into a state.
Erica, do you agree with that idea that it's almost like a functioning economy? And if it is, can you impose sanctions on it? Can you do something economically to hurt ISIS more?
a lot of people always want to ask, is ISIS a state? And there's a lot of things about it that can seem state-like. They make receipts for everything. I mean, they love writing paperwork and stamping things. But to me, the more interesting thing is what they've done with the economy. If you look at oil, for example, if suddenly the coalition was able to completely knock out oil, it would not just be ISIS or the population that's living under it that would be affected. You would also affect the rebel-held areas of Syria in the northwest right next door, because they're completely dependent on that oil to run their bakeries, their hospitals, and everything. And trade, about 90% of trade that comes from Turkey into Syria right now, you know, goods like soap or food products, 90% of that is going to ISIS territory. So you have all these merchants as well whose business would be completely destroyed. So yeah, I think looking at it in terms of economic sanctions, as you mentioned, is how you have to think about it. When you put sanctions on, say, Iran or Sudan or whatever, you or Iraq under Saddam Hussein, who got hurt? The population. And this is going to be the big problem that powers that are trying to fight ISIS will face. When they try and economically hurt ISIS, it will be very difficult to do that without hurting the locals that they rule and the populations next door.
Hearing you say that, Erica, makes me wonder how difficult it will be, at least from an economic point of view, to really make a dent on ISIS's stranglehold in that region.
It's going to be very difficult because a lot of people who are working with the coalition, the U.S.-led coalition to fight ISIS, one of the things they're saying right now is this, again, proves that we're going to have to take back the territory if we want to stop the economic benefits that ISIS is still reaping from ruling people, essentially. And that's really problematic because obviously that takes a really long time, especially when the forces that are aligned on the ground right now are not the most reliable allies. And there's not a lot of will, of course, to go back in and, you know, invade other countries to do it themselves.
Well, Erica Solomon, who's a Middle East correspondent for the Financial Times, and Stacey Vanek Smith, reporter with NPR's Planet Money, thanks so much for joining.
Thank you, Charlie.
Thank you.
And we've got links to their great reporting about this issue at our website, moneytalking.org. I'm Charlie Herman, and this is Money Talking from WNYC.